Oh, okay. Sorry. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. All right. This last section is on wet drunk work. And I promise to move everybody out of here fairly quickly. I know everybody wants to get on the road. Why wet drunk work? You know, what place does that really have in here? I believe that I'll tell you what, anybody that's been doing institutional work, carrying the message into rehabs and detoxes and such, is learning very quickly, if you haven't learned already through experience, that the insurance companies are not playing ball anymore. There was a day when you couldn't shake a stick without hitting a rehab. I mean, when I went, you know, they would solicit your business. I mean, there were so many of them back like in the early 90s. And I heard a statistic, and like all statistics in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're subject to interpretation and truth. But I heard that there was over 600 rehabs closed in 1993 alone in America, you know. So I believe that's what basically is happening is insurance companies are really tired of funding your revolving door strategy. You know what I'm saying? And they probably should. But what's happening is the institutions that were once so plentiful for us to be able to go in and detox at are drying up. And I think that what is going to happen, because it's already happened in our area, is we're going to become more and more responsible for addressing the problems of the chronically ill alcoholics. And what I mean by chronically ill usually is the ones that are still drunk or detoxing. There's a lot of information in working with others that I find very, very helpful with this. But I do want to state one of the most important things is we favor hospitalization for the befogged. Now, just because the rehabs are drying up and it's more difficult to get into the detoxes doesn't mean that you can't get hospital treatment for the alcoholic. I've done a lot of 12-step calls, and I've never been turned away at an emergency room. However, usually what happens, the way the emergency rooms like to work it is they monitor the individual's vital signs, and when they seem to be in no physical danger, in other words, when their blood pressure comes down from 10 million over 50, they'll release them. And usually it'll be 2 in the morning, and they'll try to release them to the person that brought them in. So leaving a phone number at the place is usually helpful, because I don't believe that the 12-step call starts really until you start working with the other alcoholic. Now, so you need to make sure, first of all, you need to make sure that they're physically okay. But what's happening is these hospitals are releasing the people, and they can be still drunk. They can still be on drugs. And the physical craving can still be going on in the individual. So what do you need to do? If you have the time and the ability, you need to grab these people and keep them with you for a period of time. I mean, this is what went on in the early days. They had a lot of people staying over at their homes. And if they couldn't arrange some type of hospital procedure where they could visit them in the hospital, they'd arrange it in the homes where they could visit them in the homes. Now, I came up in AA in the late 80s, early 90s in the North Jersey area, where when people talked about 12-step calls, they talked about bundling somebody in the back seat and driving them off to the detox or the rehab, letting them out the door and driving home congratulating themselves. You know, that's certainly part of a 12-step call, but I believe that our ultimate goal, the ultimate goal of the 12-step procedure is to bring a solution to the individual. In other words, somehow try to carry the message, get the person befogged or defogged or whatever, however you call it, detoxed, and then you know, have them in some type of situation or position whereby you can carry the message to them. And this is really what it's talking about a lot in the chapter Working with Others. Someone read earlier, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Larry was talking about intensive work with other alcoholics. I would certainly call it intensive work with other alcoholics to do this. My wife and I were so situated during a period of time when this was something that we could do. And there have been times in our past where we've brought the person who is safe yet still detoxing to our home, and then tried to work through the steps with them and get them as far along the steps as we could before we let them out of the house. And, you know, people thought we were crazy when we started doing this. You know, what are you doing? And I just, you know, you get brought to this. Someone else was talking about this. You get brought to this where you just intuitively know this is the right thing to do for the individual. You know that you need to keep them with you for a period of time, that their chances are going to be better if that happens. Some of my experiences with Wet Drunk Work or 12-step calls, I seem to be, Mary Beth and I both seem to be the type of people who get a lot of phone calls. I mean, there's been people who've come up to me in meetings, they've had 15 years, and they say, geez, I've never been on a 12-step call in 15 years. You know, if you ever get one, can you give me a call? And, I mean, what you try to do is you try to make yourself available for 12-step calls is really what you try to do. You try to let people know that you'll do them. You try to get in touch with and work closely sometimes with the local institutions in your area. You know, a great place to find 12-step calls is a thing called Nightwatch. I don't know if that's available around the country, but certainly in New Jersey, you can sign up for Nightwatch. And what that is for one night and one night only, you get every single call into AA in northern New Jersey. And you get to talk to some live ones, boy. Anybody ever do that? You know, ooh. And you do that a couple of times, and you're going to go on a 12-step call. There used to be something where you could sign up for 12-step calls. There's a lot of detoxes and rehabs, the ones that are still around, who have contact programs, okay? And what that is basically you let them know that you're available to help the person upon their release. You'll take them to some meetings, and you'll offer them whatever you can offer them as far as a solution to their problems. I was on a 12-step call a couple of weeks ago with my friend Ron. And again, I really believe that it talks about you'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle you. There's no area of my life where intuition is stronger than when I'm on a 12-step call or when I'm working with somebody else. It's almost like I am the co-pilot. You know what I'm saying? And people in here will understand what I mean who have experience with this. But you just know what to do. You're not smart enough to be doing what you're doing, yet you're doing it anyway. And you're saying the right things. And there was an individual in our group who is, I don't know, a member of the Reluctant to Recover home group, you know, and certainly likes to come to the meetings. You know, I'm coming to the meetings, but boy, it seems like the stuff you guys are talking about is a little extreme. And, so he's continuing the relapse, and we're watching his life erode. You know, every time he comes back, there's a new story of the erosion principle. You know, he's lost something else. Pretty soon it's going to be his mind. But he disappeared for a while, and I knew enough about his drinking patterns to know that it's really dangerous for this guy to disappear and drink by himself. And what had happened is we had found out that he had gotten a car one day and split. And his wife had by tracking the credit card number or something, had found out that he was staying in the Red Roof Motel on Route 46. And we got this information, and I can just picture it, you know, getting away for a little drinking vacation at the Red Roof. But the problem is this guy goes into alcoholic seizures and convulsions, and his muscle structure seizes up. You know, he goes like, and he's not moving for a while. And you gotta carry him like a statue into the hospital, and all this strange stuff because he's an acute alcohol. I mean, he's at the bottom of the rung as far as the physical deterioration is concerned with alcoholism. So I thought it might be a good idea to go track him down. So I sponsor his sponsor. So we got together and we went over and knocked on the door at the Red Roof Inn. And he comes to the door in his underwear. You know, all the shades are drawn. It was just perfect. And we walk in and we're all happy. And it talks in this book that, about a guy's experience where the AAs showed up. And they laughed, which I didn't like much. And I understand that now because we walk in there and it's perfect. There's McDonald's wrappers and plastic vodka bottles. And that's it. You know, that's the decor. And he's there in his underwear and he's squinting and the shades are drawn. And we like to goof on some of the people that we work with. And they say, you keep going the way you're going, you're going to lose all this. And we say to him, you know, it's not going to... and then we're laughing. He's not really, he didn't think it was too funny. But we're having a good time because I want to have a good time on a 12-step call. You know, you want to show the individual that you're happy, joyous, and free. And sometimes it's at their expense, but that's okay. Anyway, so I'll tell you what. The guy's family was over the night before. His wife and kids and nieces and nephews, the dog, you know, the parents. Nobody could budge him. The police came. They had four cop cars. He said there was four cop cars trying to get him out of the Red Roof. And he hadn't done anything wrong, so they really, nobody could do anything. You have a right to drink yourself to death. It's an inalienable, granted by our constitutional right, and I'll fight to the death for it myself. I think it's a good right. Anyway, no one could get him out of there. Within 5 minutes of us showing up there, he's on his way to a rehab. You know, he's on his way to get detoxed. There is something about an alcoholic talking with an alcoholic that's unlike anything. We can help where no one else can. You know, four cops couldn't get this guy out. We walk in there in 5 minutes. He's okay. You're going to Happy Hills for a 2-week vacation. Okay. And off he went. Now, here's what we did though. We made sure that we knew when he was going to be released so that we could contact him immediately upon his release. And again, offer him once more the program of recovery and the series of actions necessary for him to be able to remain separated from alcohol, at least in my mind, remain separated from alcohol. I've had a lot of experience with these types of 12-step calls. I think that 12-step calls are kind of like relationships. You need to get in them and make your mistakes. People can give you guidelines and you can read the book, but there's nothing like firsthand experience for you to really learn the ins and the outs of what to do and what not to do. I've made a ton of mistakes. I did this 12-step call on a person that didn't want a 12-step call, put the extension ladder up onto the third floor of their house and broke in their window to, you know, take them off to a meeting. And, you know, it was just a mess. And that was really like me thinking what they should be doing rather than, you know, offering them help. I've had my life threatened twice on 12-step calls. I remember this is the very first 12-step call I was ever on. Dave knows the guy. This guy was huge. And he was coming around to meetings, and he didn't seem like he was all there. But what happened was he was on a huge amount of drugs. And he calls me up, and it's about 11:30 at night, and he goes, "Chris, Satan is talking to me." I go, "Satan?" He goes, "Yeah, Satan's telling me to do stuff." And I knew a little bit about about that. I said, how much coke did you do? You know, just because coke and Satan, there's like a corollary, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it fits. And he goes, how'd you know? And I go, how much are you doing? He goes, well, I did 3.5 grams tonight. And I go, whoo. So I go, we'll be over. And I get a friend of mine and we drive over and we make arrangements with the rehab. We say, we're going to be bringing in a live one. I'm not even sober a year at this point in time, but I had heard never go alone on a 12-step call. Okay. And although you don't find that per se in the first 164, you'll find it inherently in all the stories. Now, I grab this guy and we go pick him up and we get him in the back of the car. I'm driving. My buddy's in the passenger seat. And I go, so how's it going? And he goes, well, Satan is still talking to me. Well, okay. And he goes, he's telling me to kill people. And that, you know, I'm like looking in the mirror and he goes, especially people that are trying to help me. And so I go, whoa. I sped up a little bit, you know, and we got him to the rehab and, he was too much for the rehab. First thing he does when he walks into the rehab is goes, do you have a gymnasium? Cause the guy's like a weightlifter. Gymnasium. He goes, yeah, I need a gymnasium. And they didn't have the right kind of gymnasium. So he ended up going to a hospital for like 8 months, a psychiatric hospital for 8 months, which is, he should have stuck with the lousy gymnasium. But anyway, that was scary. Another time, I'm down in North Carolina. Now I'm a Yankee down in North Carolina and, I have an old meeting book and the meeting book had, a meeting listed at like 6:30 at this address. And the location of the meeting had changed. I mean, we have a house down there that we only go to once a year and, you know, the meeting book was 5 years old. The meeting had changed. But what had happened is a newcomer had had an old meeting book too. This guy had just been released from prison for having 12 DWIs, six of which were in a 5 month period of time. Now, they hate that. You know, the judges hate that. That really shows like a lack of respect of one form or another. You know, so they threw this guy in prison for a while and upon his release, his codependent, and that's exactly what she ended up being. She was beautiful. She was more into his drama than he was. You know what I mean? She was like, oh, he's out of prison and he had all these DWIs. He's my man. You know? And I'm like, holy mackerel. We're going to have to get rid of her quick. Anyway, we both show up at the wrong place and we're standing there. There's no meeting. It's like the place has been sold or something. So he starts telling me, yeah, I'm just out of prison. Yeah, I have all these DWIs. I said, well, how about, well, let's go for a cup of coffee. You know, I'm going to do some 12-step work on this guy, you know, this maniacal North Carolina guy. And, we're sitting in Denny's. Mary Beth and I are sitting in Denny's and him and his codependent. And, I start hitting him with the truth. You know, it says hit him with the hopelessness of their situation. So I'm painting them into hopeless land. You know, I'm saying, you know, there's nothing you can do. You're going to have the obsession of the mind. It's going to only get worse. And I'm going to hit him with the solution soon, but I'm hitting him with, and he listens to me. He goes, I usually kill people that give me bad news. Like a waitress check, you know? Oh man. Thinking I'm, you know, arrogant New Jersey AA killed at Denny's. You know, I could just read the paper. You know, so I'm out of there. I've made my mistakes. There's just been so many times. There's been so much experience that I have with the still sick and suffering alcoholic. But I'll tell you what. You know, anybody here is familiar with the responsibility prayer. You know, when anyone anywhere reaches out for AA, we need to be there. You know, we want the hand of AA to be there. And I think that more and more it's going to become incumbent upon us to hone our skills with the still suffering alcoholic. And I mean still acutely suffering alcoholic. I think that we're going to need to get back into the practice unless something happens with the detoxes and the rehabs, who took so much of our work away from us many years ago. It made it very easy on us, you know. But anyway, some of the things that you need to be aware of is, let's say you show up at somebody's house and they decide that right in the middle of the 12-step call, it's a good time to play with a handgun. You know what I mean? Like, that'll happen. That can happen. I don't really think it's a great idea to stay around and let somebody like load and reload their handgun like while you're trying to 12-step them. I think it'd probably be a better idea to just split. It's just, it's my own opinion. I mean, you know, follow your own conscience. But I've found it, I'm still around, so it's worked for me. Another thing is it talks in this book about try not to get involved in family arguments. I went on this one 12-step call with this guy, and we're called over to this house. We walk into this house. There's still smoke. Man, the house smells like an old wet campfire. You know that smell? It's like, ooh, nasty. We walk in there, and what had happened was this guy had come home really drunk, and he liked fires, you know. We've all got a little pyromania in us, you know. So he built two fires in his fireplaces without opening the flues or opening them correctly. And it absolutely filled up this house with smoke. And his wife came home, and the smoke detectors are going off, and she can't even see to get in there. You know, it's like, and he's in there passed out. And she calls the fire department. And the fire department comes, and they've got these big, huge fans that they blow the place out with when they find out that there's no real fire. And she's concerned enough that she's going to call AA, I think she made him call AA, you know. So we're on our way over there. And we sit down, and the place just stinks, and we're sitting there, and he's like, I just drink beer, you know. There's no real problem. I'm going, you smell like Smokey the Bear. You know, you passed out with fires going in the house. Okay, maybe that's not important. His wife comes out and she starts, Should I divorce him? And I'm like, I can't answer that. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole, you know. I recommend that you go to Al-Anon, absolutely. Another thing that we do is, we have Al-Anon contacts, and sometimes on 12-step calls, we've brought Al-Anons if it seemed appropriate, you know, to corral the rest of the family and, you know, talk about whatever issues they need to talk about there. We've got a lot of those contacts. We have a list of hospitals, detoxes, alcoholism therapists. I mean, we've got a wealth of resources at our fingertips, just because you never know when you're going to need to refer somebody to something, you know. So when we're on a 12-step call, we always have that information. We always have a lot of phone numbers, and we can always, if we can't answer specific questions, we usually have the resources available to answer them. One of the things that you need to know about the alcoholic who is detoxing is, here's a statistic for you that I got from Burns Brady, who's probably one of the preeminent addictionologists on the planet. He really knows his stuff. And I believe that this was his quote. He said that 20% of alcoholics, is it 15%? I'm numerically dyslexic, so what is it? 15% of alcoholics get to the point in their progression where they suffer from the DTs or violent withdrawal symptoms. 15% of the alcoholics that suffer violent withdrawal symptoms die from them. Now, one of the major ways that you die is your blood pressure goes up to such a rate that your aorta blows. It's like, you know, it's like a garden hose with too much pressure. It's like, you know, and that's that. Your ticket's punched. You don't really want that to happen
on your watch. You know, you don't want it to happen in your house or in your car because it's just, it's inconvenient. There's all kinds of, you wouldn't believe the paperwork. So you don't want that to happen. So you need, sometimes you need to call the ambulance. But I'll tell you what, on all of the 12-step calls that I go on, I have booze with me. Now this last 12-step call, the red roof guy, I brought whiskey. I mean, I didn't know what the guy drank. So we had a couple of these airline bottles of whiskey. And it was kind of a long ride to the detox. I didn't know he was a vodka drinker until after I had packed the whiskey. So we're driving. He goes, it's like, I need a drink. Gotta have a drink. So I go, okay, here's the whiskey. He says, whiskey? I'm like, look, just drink it, okay? Just drink this stuff, will you? And he does. He drinks it. And then all of a sudden he starts to go green. He's in the back of my car. He's like, whoop, whoop, whoop. I'm like, but I'm smart enough. I bring garbage bags. The bigger, the better. You know, I mean, like laundry size garbage bags, you know. Go grab the garbage bag. Cause I've got that rich Corinthian leather. You know what I mean? I don't want this guy's like vodka bourbon mixture on the back of my car. So you, there's things that you need to bring, you know, you need to bring a garbage bag. You need to bring booze sometimes, you know, because like I say, it was a long drive we had to drive all the way to Pennsylvania. It was about 60 miles. Because I have a resentment against the New Jersey detoxes. Because here's what, the last time I called the New Jersey detox, they said, so you got somebody, huh? Can you wait 6 hours to bring him in? I'm like, why? Goes, because that's when the shift change is, and I'm out of here. I'm like, oh, fags. You know, they wanted one more new guy, like a hole in the head. Because we're such wonderful people when we show up, you know. It's like, oh boy, we got another live one. Oh man. Well, alcoholics are great. We're the type of people who we come in like begging for help. Oh, I'm dying. Can you help me? You know, they give you a couple of Libriums. The next morning, you're starting to notice they're not running this operation right. You know what I mean? The towels aren't clean or there's no locks on the door, right, Mary Beth? And, you know, or something, you know, and you start complaining. You could run this place so much better, and you start getting a resentment. And pretty soon you walk out AMA, you know, screw this place. And you don't pay your bill, right? And 2 weeks later you're back. Oh, can you please help me? You know, why in the world would they love seeing you again? So I sometimes use the drop and split method. Does anybody know what the drop and split method is? Okay. Here's the drop and split method. Sometimes you need to let the individual off at the institution of your choice, whatever that is, and split. Don't hang around. Don't allow them. Don't let the person, for two reasons. One reason is, don't allow the person time to talk himself. Well, you know, I don't think it's really that bad. You know, thanks a lot. Could you just take me home? You know, you can stop that. But the main reason is you don't allow the institution the chance of saying take him somewhere else. Because I don't know about you, but I don't like driving to more than one place. You know, when the guy's in the back seat of the car going, ooh, 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 you know, I want to get, you know. This place is fine. So I don't do it all the time. I'm not recommending this as something that you always do. But there are places in New Jersey where I do it. A lot of times they'll want your ID. They'll want to know who you are. They'll want to know your cell phone number so they can call you up if the person's a problem and you can come get them. And that's all well and fine. You know, sometimes you may not be able to do that. One of the things that you have to be aware of today is 12-step calls have changed with the advent of a lot of serious drugs. There's a lot of serious drugs that people can be on, and they can be having violent reactions to some wacky drugs and call up AA for help or get you over there on a 12-step call. And you could be showing up while somebody's in crack delirium and incredibly violent. And you can be walking in expecting to get a drunk.
He got hooked up with a woman who was on crack, and he went from 0 to 100 in about 10 seconds on crack. And one day he saw her, he thought he saw a demon coming at him, and he started beating her with a hammer. And he ended up in jail for attempted murder. And this is a very, very peaceful guy, but he's on crack, and he's on way too much crack. So you have to kind of protect yourself. Always go with two people. And if you can get a big two people, you know, that's probably even better. You know, it says in this book, if you have to fight with an alcoholic, knock him out. You know, that's, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what it says, you know? And so you might want a big guy with you. You know, I kid a lot, but this is really, really serious stuff. And I think we all need to take it seriously. It is becoming our, it always was our responsibility, and then it became responsibility of the neighborhood, detox and the neighborhood treatment centers and the neighborhood professionals. And I think that we at the very least, should have the skills necessary to provide this service to the still suffering alcoholic, you know? And it's not going to happen every night. It's not going to happen all the time. I find that about once a month or once every 2 or 3 months, we go on a live drunk 12-step call. I want to talk, the last thing I want to talk about, and this is probably controversial because you're not going to find this very much in the big book, but we've been approached by families quite often saying, can you help our family member, you know, they're really in trouble and they don't want to quit and this, that, and the other thing. And there have been a few periods of time when we've been guided, because when you have an awakened spirit, sometimes you're guided to do things and sometimes you're guided not to do things. That doesn't mean that they're right and wrong, and it doesn't mean that they'll work out and they won't work out. You're just guided and you just feel like it's the right thing to do. And we've had interventions over at our house. And there's a classic intervention, and the individual was going to be up here today, but because of the weather, did not want to make the trip. But anyway, here's his story. He's whacked on drugs. He'd gone down the scale really far. He was a school teacher, and you know, he ended up unemployed, and broke and homeless and all this stuff, and he had caused a lot of trouble by robbing family. It was just a mess, and the family was really concerned because there was a period of time when the guy, it was a great guy, he was a school teacher, you know what I mean? So we said, okay, we'll do an intervention, but it's going to have to be on our terms, and we'll see what we can do. We didn't even call it an intervention. We said, we'll see what we can do, but it's going to have to be on our terms. Get your family members together first, and we want to meet with them over here. The family members came over, and we kind of qualified them. We said, look, some of the things that we're going to be saying, some of the things that we're going to be doing, you're going to not understand, you're going to probably disagree with, and it's just going to be scary for you. But you have to trust us. We know a little bit about the alcoholic mentality. You have to trust us. So every single family member that agreed to let us lead this thing was invited, and they brought the individual over to the house. Now this guy was quite surprised and quite upset. But because we had the family's full support, we painted him into a corner. He had done some credit card robberies and stuff like that, so we basically said, do what we tell you to do or you're going to jail. And, I mean, it was as simple as that. And so the individual, was trying to work, ended up escaping in the middle of the intervention and running to a phone to call his drug dealer. You know, in the middle, wait a minute, we're in the middle of an intervention with you. Could you sit still for a minute? You know, calling the drug dealer. So anyway, we finally put the person in. We finally had the person agree to go into there was no money, so he agreed to go into the Salvation Army. From the Salvation Army, after he got thrown out of there for ODing, it ended up that the pressure from the family ended up being so great that the individual finally said, okay, and we got him a free ride in Honesty House, a since defunct rehab in our area. 3 weeks into Honesty House, it happened. Do you know what I mean by it happened? The turning point where you don't want it, you don't want it, you don't want it. Well, wait a minute. I think I do want it. That happened 3 weeks into this this bit in the treatment center. Now, if we didn't do that intervention, what could have happened? Who knows? Who knows what could have happened? But we were guided to do it, and it ended up working out well. The person is now one of the main guys in the York area carrying the message. You know, we send people to him now because he's got a huge amount of halfway house type resources available to him. And I've probably sent him 4 guys in the last year and a half, you know. So that ended up working out really well. We've had interventions that didn't go so well. Again, this is not really big book. This is just something that that we've been led into, you know, and sometimes it works. Sometimes it works. The greatest thing about my life, you know, let's say the end of my life, it's at the end of my life and everybody's standing around my coffin and they're talking about me. You know, I think the thing that will be the most important is they'll say he really tried to help people. They're not going to say he had a whole lot of toys. They're not going to say he was a good at golf. You know, they're not going to say those things. They're going to say, you know, this person might have really mattered. And I want that. You know, I want that. I also want the people who suffered from that incredible alcoholic, you know, toward the end of your alcoholism where loneliness and despair and resentment and fear. I want the people that suffered that stuff like myself to get help like I got to, you know, I really do. So I believe in things like this workshop that we all put together here this weekend. I believe in carrying the message. I believe in helping the still suffering alcoholic. In whatever way we can, in the most appropriate ways we can. I want to thank everybody for coming here. I want to thank Glenn Kay and Jane for taping this and making this stuff available. I want to thank the Wilson House and the Wilson House staff for having us here. You know, they said some real good things about you all. You know, like we were really good guests. You know, they kind of have a guest rating thing, and we rated really high. So I just want you all to know that. I especially want to thank the presenters. Every single presentation up here I got a lot from. And thank you all for coming.